From the Draco Vista Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, unlocking secrets of writing, conversing with masters of the craft, and just having a lot of fun. It's the Dragon Page, cover to cover.
And welcome to another Dragon Page cover to cover. I'm Michael R. Menengay.
And I am Michael Stackpole.
And I'm trying to write stuff down here and do this at the same time. It's not working. Alrighty. Well, we got another really cool show for you today. Actually, very topical things in the news this week as we record at the end of February.
Yeah, we're recording at the end of February, so this, by the time you're hearing this, this will have all gone down about 2.5 weeks ago. But already we're beginning to see the cascading implications of this. Approximately early on in February, Borders had tried to convert their debt into a bond. Basically, they tried to get all the publishers to loan them the money that they owed them. Publishers did not like that plan and responded by not sending them any new content.
Yes.
Borders then
kind of gave
around.
Them the finger, so to speak.
Pretty much. So Borders turned around and they filed for Chapter 11 protection. They noted in their filing that they had $1.28 billion worth of assets and $1.29 billion worth of debt.
Mm-hmm.
They're obviously going to have to restructure. And one of the things that happened with that, about a week after that went down, Barnes & Noble reported their stock earnings. They disappointed Wall Street because their net earnings were down, despite the ebook stuff being very, very successful.
Mm-hmm.
And in those filings, they noted two things. One, they noted two reasons why they were declining to advise Wall Street how they thought their stock would do going forward in 2011, and they cited two things. One, they noted that the sale of physical books was trending down, or had been down and was continuing to trend down, and they weren't necessarily expecting a turnaround. The second thing that they had to brace themselves for was the impact of the Borders bankruptcy. As many of you have already seen, I've seen reports on Twitter from across the country, Borders is closing a bunch of stores, and when they're closing those stores, they've got signs on them that say for sale, and everything is for sale.
Yes.
And what's going to
fixtures, everything.
Fixtures, books,
even the
music,
employees
DVDs,
are for sale.
There
if you want
go.
If you want a Borders employee, I bet you if you make them offer, you'll probably get one.
Well, exactly. But why does that impact Barnes & Noble? Well, it's very simple this. If you're somebody that is looking to buy some movies and Borders offers you a 20% discount on them, Barnes & Noble offers 20% discount, but Borders is offering it for a 40% discount or a 60% discount, obviously you're going to go there and you're going to buy a bunch of those movies. So, and the same thing for books and same thing. So basically, people are going to save a lot of money. They're going to take their leisure time cash and sort of advance themselves leisure time cash, and they're going to cash in now. They'll buy a bunch of stuff, which they'll consume over the next several months.
It's a Circuit City phenomenon all over again. When Circuit City closed all their stores, it actually made a bigger dent and took a bigger bite out of Best Buy and Radio Shack, because everybody went there and bought all their stuff because it was super, super cheap, and they bought everything that they were going to need for electronics and left no room in the marketplace for other stores.
Exactly.
So, same situation.
Yeah, and so you've got to, you know, this is going to be, this is a problem. I mean, the bright note in the Barnes & Noble thing was they said that, again, they had sold enough ebooks to give them a 25% stake in the market.
Mm-hmm.
So they claim that they've got a 25% stake in the market.
That's arguable on some blogs I've been seeing, though.
Right, but that's what. But basically, they're claiming that that was their goal for Nook sales in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So they've already hit that, and they claim that at their current rate of selling ebooks, they will remain profitable going through the future.
And that's so important.
That is very important.
It is important, whether or not you believe the numbers or not, that they fudge the numbers for, you know, the stockholders and for Wall Street, yada, yada, whatever. Let's not get into that conversation. Well, they are doing very well with it.
I should just say, based on my own numbers that I see, my sales with Barnes & Noble versus my sales for the Kindle,
mm-hmm.
okay, using those two as benchmarks, and talking to a number of other authors who are also selling on those platforms. You know, I'm looking at my Barnes & Noble's numbers being about 20% of my Kindle numbers.
That's excellent.
Which really puts them at, you know, at 15% stake in the market, roughly speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really, really good. And you know, for anybody that's looking at this is an ongoing source of discussion and with people out there. But basically, if you're looking at selling books on the internet, as long as you got them on sale through Amazon for the Kindle, and as long as you got them on Barnes & Noble, and as long as you've got the EPUB version that you've got on Barnes & Noble available on your own website,
you're pretty well covered.
You've covered over 80% of the market. Mm-hmm. You know, don't worry about iBooks. Don't worry about Kobo Books. Don't worry about some of these other places, because there you're just picking up scraps, and the effort you may have to go through and the splits you give away really might not be worth it.
Yeah. But, believe it or not, we're actually not pimping Apple this week. So
No, we aren't. You know, in the iBook store can be a pain in the ass to get your stuff into.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is definitely a downside there. Yeah. The device itself, we're still way happy with, but as far as
but as it is, you know, if you don't have it available in the iBook store, people either have their Nook app on their iPads, mm-hmm. or they have their Amazon app on their iPads.
Exactly.
So they're going to get it anyway. So
you're going to
don't worry about it. So again, if you've got it in Barnes & Noble and you've got it in Amazon.com, you are covered.
Yep.
And as John Merz said in our show last week, and it's absolutely true, you know, once that it takes 60 days for you to get your first check out of both of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
But once you do that, that income just rolls in like clockwork. The first of every month, you just get a direct deposit check mm-hmm. in your bank account. And it's like, oh, here's $400 that I wasn't counting on.
It's just extra job.
I can eat this month.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Or I can pay my health insurance or buy my damn high blood pressure medicine.
There you go.
So how does Big Pharma figure this? Okay. They want to charge me $200 a month for high blood pressure medicine. How the hell is that going to get my blood pressure down?
That is funny.
Jeez.
I was managing it well until I found out how much it was going to cost me to manage my bike.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, I'm
telling you. Self-fulfilling sales.
Well,
that
it
way.
Really is. Yeah, it's inside the demand supply loop. Oh, yeah.
That's hilarious. So, awesome. But yeah, big story this week, and we're going to definitely be keeping on top of this as we move forward and see what else happens. But this is a big shakeup in the industry all the way around.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
I'm not going to speculate on it.
Well,
there's a couple other things out there with some publishers that maybe have some issues too.
You know, at the same time, also in this particular week, Page One, which was a large independent bookstore set up in Albuquerque,
mm-hmm.
it announced that it would be going filing for Chapter 11.
Yep.
So it's you know, the outlets are becoming harder and harder to find. And again, part of the reason why online then becomes very, very important for you as an author, even if you don't have anything for sale yet, having that website up, having that blog up, beginning mm-hmm. to build that community, people are going to have to come to the web to look for content. Because they just aren't going to be able to find it in the bookstores.
Exactly.
You know, so you definitely want to be getting yourself a spot on a shelf somewhere.
This is exciting times, I tell you.
Absolutely.
It really is. Because, you know, as it's sad to see this go, some of these go, but at the same time, this is just more opportunity for you as authors.
Yeah, absolutely.
And absolutely. Because you're really getting empowered. And that's exciting stuff.
And, yeah, and we make more.
Yes. Which is
very cool.
We're going to count our money now. We'll be back right after this.
Boy, that won't take long.
Well, it's a short break.
Okay, that's good.
Hey, Kev, Dad's asleep. Let's do an experiment.
What experiment?
The one from Mythbusters, where they put the guy's hand in the water to see if he would pee on himself. Let's try it on Daddy.
Hey, kids, what are y'all doing?
Nothing, Mom.
Do you have your own little geeks? Need some ideas to keep them out of trouble? Well, check out the How to Grow Your Geek podcast.
We have cool kids' books and movie reviews.
We have awesome game reviews.
And we have interviews, advice, and a whole lot of fun. Check us out at
HowToGrowYourGeek.net.
And welcome back to more Dragon Page Cover to Cover. I'm Michael R. Menengay.
And I am Michael Stackpole.
And joining us on the phone, excuse me, we have Patricia Briggs. Her latest book is called Watermarked. Welcome to the show, Patricia.
Thank you. And it's Rivermarked.
I'm sorry.
Shame on you.
You're right. Rivermarked. I've got it.
No worries.
I actually have it in front of me.
That's okay. He wrote it down correctly, but he's never read anything correctly.
Actually, Watermark would be an awesome name for a book. About a printer, you know, who gets in trouble with a magical watermark. And I'm sorry. Okay.
Well, I saw the water and looked at river and it said water and
look.
Spinach
anyway. just write that down. You got another book idea there. You know.
That's nice. Exactly right. Yep, I'll make sure to mention you guys when I. Yeah.
No, oh, that's awesome.
So when are you be done that new book, The Watermark? Because we can talk to you about that too.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about Rivermarked then. Tell us what's going on in that book.
Rivermarked is, and I'm going to be embarrassed now. I think it's the sixth Mercy Thompson book. I don't count because I remember what happens. I don't remember the numbers, but I believe it's the sixth one. And in this one, Mercy's encountering a river monster, and I had just a ball writing it. It was really, really fun. This is my monster book. And I know I write about vampires and werewolves. I have lots of monster books, but this is a different. This is a river monster. So it was really fun to be really creepy and horrible with something that's under the water, which scares me anyway. So it also brings in Mercy's heritage. She's Native American, and this is the first time really in the series that I've dealt with that in a serious way. And I just had a ball with it. So I hope that everybody else enjoys it too.
Now I've long had a theory that when you're doing series fiction that one of the ways you know the series is going to go well is how well a character does in what I generally refer to as an away game. If you see detectives, they always solve three or four crimes in their home precinct, and then they have to have an away game, and you'll know the series is going to do well. So is this your away game?
Well, yes and no. This is not very far away. It's about an hour and a half from the Tri-Cities. Well, maybe it's a little farther than that. How far is it, Mike, to Marysville? I'm talking to Michael, and Michael and I asked my husband Mike. So yes.
Wow, we got the trifecta of Mikes this week. That's awesome.
That's pretty awesome. It's about an hour and a half, something to get out there. So it's not a long ways away,
sure.
But it is in the sense that she's outside. You know, it's the only characters that are a big part of the main plot line of this book are Mercy and her. Significant other. I say that. I can do that without giving out spoilers. Significant other, Adam. And the two of them are out. And I really enjoyed that being forced to concentrate on those two characters instead of being distracted by everybody else.
Well, now, before we get too deep into this, let's back up all the way back for those out there that may not have read this series at all. What is the premise and what is the what's it all about? Let's start with book one and get some people excited about picking that book up and start reading it.
Okay, the whole series is, well, book one is about a woman whose name is Mercedes Thompson, and she fixes VWs. And yes, there is a joke in there, and no, I didn't notice it until I was writing the book, and I thought, hey, that's pretty cool, and threw it in. So Mercedes, who fixes VWs. And then she's also half Native American, and her Native American half, and she never knew her father, who was the Native American half, left her with a heritage in which allows her to take the shape of a coyote. So she's a coyote shapeshifter who makes her living as a VW mechanic, living in the Tri-Cities, which on the surface is not all that interesting, except for the Tri-Cities happens to be within an hour's trip of one of the several Fae reservations. So we have the Fae running around town. They also have a vampire Steve who is in the Tri-Cities being punished because we have... This is possibly one of the sunniest places, certainly in Washington State. It's one of the sunniest places around. And the only reason vampires would be here is because somebody made them go. So they're very bitter and unhappy and have happy thoughts of Italy and are constantly trying to do something that will allow them to go back to Italy. And the and then there's werewolves in town, and the alpha werewolf happens to live right next to her on purpose because he was sent here to kind of keep an eye on her. She was raised by werewolves because her mother knew about werewolves and had a child that turned into a coyote and figured that it was kind of outside her experience. So, but that was a long time ago, and Mercy's now 30, and she's 30-ish, and she's independent and on her own and kind of a loner. I was at a convention this last weekend. How do we do that? Much intrigue ensues, and they have ensues. I did that too. Sorry, a lady, a really nice person at the convention did that too. We all made comments about things that are ensues, but it's to do with a novel. I love urban fantasy anyway, and setting it in the Tri-Cities gives me a special little happy place in my heart, because the Tri-Cities is one of those places that on the surface looks very bland and very, upscale is the wrong word, very typical American suburb kind of city, even though it's not a suburb of a big city, and it's not at all, and I like that, and it was a very good place, I think, to put a bunch of critters who are hiding from the light.
Now, do you find writing urban fantasy that this gives you a chance to get a little bit snarky about certain social or political things that are going on nowadays?
Oh, yes. I wrote straight fantasy for many, many years, and I still love it, and I intend to go back and write some more. But the urban fantasy does. It gives me a little more chance at pointed observations, shall we say.
Now, do you find that you have readers who react positively or negatively depending upon what the political bent of your hero appears to be from these comments?
Can you ask me that question one more time?
Yeah, sure, no problem. When you're making social commentary, do you find that you have readers who react positively or negatively depending upon the perceived bias that they see in those remarks from those characters?
Well, in a way, I have people. They tend to. I will have some character make a remark that actually is exactly the opposite of the way I feel, because I think that's a good way to have some tensions happen in the novel. And, for a good example, my werewolves are very stuck in the 50s, shall we say. They're very, you know, good little woman ought to be, you know, home in the kitchen and not bother her head about much and that kind of stuff. And I've had a lot of letters about people who feel that I'm very misogynistic and that
right.
I'm, you know, trying to put Mercy down and that I'm being mean to her and things, which I find kind of amusing because the whole point of it is, of course, Mercy's not going to let them get away with any of that. But that's okay. I don't mind if people are upset about what I write, especially if I kind of agree with them. I would mind much more if I bored people. So as a writer, you take what you take what reaction you can get.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, controversy is definitely your best friend, and especially for any kind of voice that you're trying to give out there. So, but
absolutely, yeah, yeah, absolutely, and you know, and some there's a lot of things, a lot of issues that are huge, and I don't really know which side to come down on, and I think a lot of people, well, I don't know how other people feel, but I know my characters will take two different sides of issues and come up with pretty good arguments that I think, you know, for that particular issue, and may or may not come to any conclusion because I don't know that there is a real answer at this point.
Interesting.
It is very cool, and you alluded to doing other things outside of this series earlier on. Are you actually doing anything with that, or is that just something you're looking to explore later on after you get this going?
Right. Yeah. At this point, it's to explore later on. I have urban fantasy contracts for a while. I mean, I'm doing some things where I have another series that I write that's also urban fantasy and sort of connected, but it gives me a little more leeway to play because the Mercy series is in first person and it's very, you know, it's the whole smorgasbord of all of the fantasy critters out there. And then the other series is third person, so it gives me a little bit more, I get to play a little bit more with voice and a little bit more with different character types than I do in the Mercy series. And also I get to deal specifically with the werewolves and kind of the weird problems and issues that come with turning furry when the moon comes up. And so I'm not anxiously jonesing to go and write something different, but I do have some fantasy novels that are sticking, that are there in my head, that kind of gelling and waiting for me to pull them out.
Very cool. Very cool. So what's next for you?
Next for me is, we just named it today, Fair Game, which is the next Alpha and Omega novel, which is the other urban fantasy series that I'm working on, which at this point is going to be a story about a serial killer in Boston, and not the Strangler. So, that's just a jump-off point. There'll be a lot of other things going on in it, but that's the main thread
and
at this point.
I was going to say, do you find in writing the urban fantasy that this gives you a lot of opportunities to go out and do research, like, you know, to travel to Boston and write the trip off, or...
Yeah. Oh yeah, and it's funny. I did a lot of research for the traditional fantasy too,
sure.
But it took on a more, go out to my horses and see if actually I can ride a horse with a rope around his nose instead of halter or sort of bridle or something like that, or
right.
Or calling people. The urban fantasy is I have to be a lot more familiar with the city. So Hunting Ground took place in Seattle, so it was just terrible. We had to go out and take 4 or 5 days and run around and play in Seattle. It was just, I can't tell you how hard work it is.
Yeah. You sound so pained, but it's nice to know you're willing to suffer for your art.
Yeah, I suffer for my art. Yeah, we are planning on heading over to Boston, yes, for this book. And I actually I don't know why particularly we jumped on Boston. It just we threw some cities out in the air, and I know a lot of cities pretty well. I know we lived in Chicago, and my brother lived in Houston for years and years, and San Francisco for years beyond that. And I suppose I'll use those too. But for some reason, Boston kept coming up, and I thought, okay, fine, I'll just put it in Boston, and we'll go have fun and explore some more over there too.
Now, because I do research as well for my books, and we always encourage, because we have a lot of listeners who want to write or prospective writers, and so we encourage them to do.
Yes, I did know you do a lot of research because I like your books. Oh, they're well done.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. can you describe what it kind of feels like when, say, you're in Seattle, or when you're in a place, or when you're doing some research and sort of that thing you didn't expect, or that thing that locks it in for you, just suddenly it's there?
Oh, it is the best. Yeah, it's the best feeling of the world. Let me take Rivermark. I knew I was going to do a river monster, and that was because I read a lot of Native American stories, and in doing a little research, found a monster stories about a creature that lived in the Columbia River that ate people. It was a coyote story. It was an awesome story, and I thought, okay, well, we'll run with that. And I went over to Maryhill, and not too far from there is a boy. I wish I knew how to pronounce the Indian word, so I'm not going to even try. but there are petroglyphs and pictograms in this little park. It's Columbia Hills State Park. It used to be Horse Thief Lake State Park, which is a much neater name.
Yeah,
but they're
yeah.
sanitizing all our state park names. You know that, right?
In Arizona they're going the other direction.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I have a brother-in-law who's in the oil business who has been running over all over eastern Montana for years, and he gets pretty bitter about it too. So I was over there and going through the just walking by the petroglyphs, which are the carvings in the rock, and there it was, this monster. And it looked like a monster. It looked like a river monster. And I talked to the guy. Later on, I asked the guide. I said, oh, what is that? She goes, oh, that's the river devil. And I thought, yes.
There you go.
Score.
Very cool.
And so not only did I have this creature, I had what it looked like, which was really, it was really cool. It looks almost like a Chinese dragon. And so I have this monster. I know what it looks like. And I have verifiable evidence.
There you go.
Really awesome when you're writing a fantasy about monsters, right?
Exactly.
That is great.
Wow, that's a cool story.
That is wonderful.
Oh, and unfortunately, we're running out of time here, but really quickly, where can people find you? Where should they go look?
Oh, for Rivermark or for the book?
For you.
I have a whole bunch of book signings coming up. I'm going to be starting the first of this month, this coming month, March. I'm going to be running around all over the place. And if you want specific places, you can look on my website. It's on the front page. If you live there in one of the cities where I'm coming by, make sure you call the bookstore ahead of time and find out if there's any protocols. I know some of the smaller bookstores have pass out numbers and that kind of thing. But come visit, come see me. And I think if you're interested, I should have further back in my webpage, there's a under appearances, there's all of the conventions that I am appearing in this year.
Awesome.
Which is quite a bit.
And so, what's your website?
www.patriciabriggs.com.
Very easy.
Fantastic. And we will definitely have all of those links up on Dragon Page as well. And that was the wrong music.
Oh, boy.
There we go. That's better. Hey, there's my music I like.
Sanitizing the show, were you?
There we go. What the heck? Well, thanks so much. And we will be looking for those books. And I can't wait to see Watermarked. I'm looking forward to that book.
All right. It might be a short story. It's just like,
okay. Well, you know, we're a short story as it is, so that would be perfect.
Awesome. You guys take care. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Not a problem.
Thank you for being here.
So, you're still hanging on to that tiny thread of denial, trying to convince yourself that sci-fi has nothing whatsoever to do with your life. Well, you better think again, Sparky. That tiny cell phone has no basis in Starfleet communicators. Those hands-free earpieces now used by virtually everybody didn't come down from the ear of Lieutenant Uhura. And that cute little Rumba vacuum cleaner that you use far too infrequently wasn't hijacked off an Imperial Star Cruiser. Nah, not a chance. Because if it were true, then you would be forced to turn on that Flash Gordon-inspired box on your desk called a computer and listen to SliceOfSciFi.com, the podcast and XM satellite radio show that will turn your sci-fi into reality.
Just a couple minutes to wrap things up here.
You are not getting watermarked tattooed on your shoulder.
I am too. I think it's awesome. Can't wait. I want that book.
Well, there you heard it, folks. It was just that is the way that books and ideas are born.
That's
someone
for sure.
Makes a wise ass comment, and
there it is.
Off on a rocket.
Well, unfortunately, we don't get really a lot of time to talk about too much. Other than I would like to kind of keep on top of this the bookstore thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are some rumblings that there's more to come. I think this is just the beginning. So
if you guys do think about calling in and just give us a let us know where you are, what size of town you're in, and what the bookstore situation seems to be in your town, because that would be on the net you hear all sorts of horror stories, and you hear wonderful stories, so it'd be kind of cool to kind of get a little bit of a census of way things are in the book business.
And so, maybe even more important, how about some of the small mom and pop shops that are in your town that may be shaking things up, doing something a little different?
Yeah.
Let's get some positive things out here too, because
let's tell you what we should do. We should encourage everybody, if you guys want to call in, just let us know at the beginning of the call that it's sort of a bookstore report.
Mm-hmm.
And if we get enough of them, what we can do is a special edition.
Yeah.
Of the show. And
exactly.
So we'll just do an all email thing, and we'll talk, and we'll have people talking about what bookstores are doing in their areas and stuff.
Thing that got me thinking about this is, Poison Pen here, yep, and the other one.
Changing Hands.
These are exceptional bookstores here, yep, in town, and are doing, they're not feeling the pinch like the other bookstores are, because they are doing things the right way. They're putting together, they've got their groups, they put together events, and they sponsor their events very well. They're usually very well attended.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
And it's in contrast to other things that are going out there with the big mom and pop, the big brick and mortar shops. The mom and pops are doing better.
Absolutely, because they're paying attention to what's going on. They're not driven from corporate. So.
Exactly. So that number, 206-350-READ, that's 206-350-7323. Leave us your comments, and we'll try and get something special going on for that.
Very good.
But, of course, DragonPage.com, that's where everything is happening. Of course, you can find us everywhere. You know where we're at. Go check us out in Second Life and all that fun stuff. You're still doing your office hour things.
I do my office hour Wednesday nights.
There you go.
So there we are.
All right. We will talk to you again next week, and should have more fun and craziness as usual.
All right.
Enjoy.
Bye.